Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
This is Steve Downs, the voice of Master Chief, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight.
Podcast Unlocked.
Hey everybody, welcome to Podcast Unlocked, episode 167. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, joined by, well, no one at the moment. This is a very special episode of Podcast Unlocked. Phil Spencer is in the building. He's going to come on in here in a minute and talk to us, catch us up on all things Xbox going on at Microsoft. So let's get right to that. This is a special episode. We're going to skip the rest of it and just get right to the good stuff. And that is Phil Spencer. So I hope you enjoy the interview, and then we'll see you next week.
IGN's number one Xbox podcast, the Podcast Unlocked, presents The News Unlocked!
Very pleased this week on Podcast Unlocked to have the returning champion, the king in the house, Phil Spencer, head of Xbox himself. Good to see you, Phil.
He was well, Ryan. It's good to be here.
So it's been a year since we last had you on the show. You were here almost exactly 1 year ago, actually, just prior to the launch of Xbox One. We talked for, I don't know, like an hour and a half or something about all
discussion.
Kinds of stuff. And yeah, it was a great interview. I always enjoy talking to you. And you actually do listen to this show. You prove it every now and again by referencing something.
Yeah, you know, it's... You guys are insightful in your opinions about the industry, both about us, things we should be doing well, things we are doing well. I listen to a lot of different podcasts and what people have to say. I put it on my car, Bluetooth stream it through my stereo. Listen, it works really well, and I think you guys do a good job, so I appreciate the support.
That. Well, I appreciate you being here. And I'm going to start small with you, and then we'll kind of work the scale.
The body blows will come later.
Yeah, they'll just start with a few jabs. But I want to start... Something that annoys me and annoys a lot of Xbox fans that you've addressed before, so I want to check in with you on this. We're going to check in here. It's a checkup. It's like a physical. Turn your head and cough. You've mentioned that reducing install times for games. It's something Sony does great on the PS4. You can usually install something lickety-split, get right in and play it. Xbox One, not so much. I mean, I was just installing Sunset Overdrive last night, and it takes a while. It takes some time. So where are we with that? You've mentioned that as something you do want to help try and improve on the system.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it's I'll say our launch games, and most people who follow you guys know this. You know, we had a certain policy about the console always being connected.
Right.
And that meant that games like Forza and Rise and stuff, as they thought about how they would be installed from the time they were kind of started as games, had a certain assumption that changed. And I think for our launch games and even games that kind of ship through the spring, the change to having to deal with an offline-only state meant that all the install kind of code flows weren't as perfect as they could be. What I had in the summer is I had the team start installing on PS4 and installing on Xbox One, third-party games.
Sure.
The first-party games, there's not really an equivalent.
There's no comparison.
To see, you know, where are we falling behind on installing. And they send me spreadsheets as the third-party games are coming out on when we're falling behind what Sony's able to do with PlayStation. I've actually, in certain cases, we do better, and there are cases where we do significantly worse at install times. And then I'm going after, like, what are there systemic reasons for that? I mean, our drive's obviously the same speed.
Yeah.
Moving stuff into memory takes the same amount of time. Hard drive speed's basically the same. So what's going on? And I'm capturing the data. I want to be state of the art in install time so people can start playing games as soon as possible. It's high on my priority list.
Is it an operating system thing? Is it just the way the OS works? Or,
you know, if, and I'm not obviously, if when I look at the data with the third party games, which I said I think are the best apples to apples comparisons, yeah, the deltas aren't that great between what the teams are doing on us and Sony. And I wouldn't say, and I'm not defending it at all, because I do think install time should be faster, that there isn't like one thing to say, like, why is this, why are we 2 seconds slower on this game?
Right.
Or frankly, why are we 2 seconds faster on a different game? The issues are a little bit in the weeds and things that we're trying to fix and trying to make more smooth line for the developers. It's really our developer pipeline and our ingestion system where we have to do the most work, and that's where we're focusing.
So where is that on the roadmap? I mean, because you've been great about monthly updates. We just heard about what's coming in the November update, some custom backgrounds and other things. where does install times fall on the roadmap?
It's kind of a constant. And one thing that maybe some of the consumers don't know, or the gamers out there that are fans of Xbox, is when we do the monthly updates, there's a whole nother side to the monthly updates, which is developer facing.
Right.
So as the new previews
the
come
XDKs.
Out. The XDKs. And there are features that are listed there that are enabling developers to use more of the resources on Xbox. We've seen that. And some of the things, again, that are a little more in the weeds, like install times and stuff. So I'd say it's a constant. It's one of the things at the top of my list in terms of the parity experience between us and Sony and making sure that the install times aren't deficient on Xbox in any way. So I'd say it's just a constant item, and we're constantly going after the things that are causing the deltas.
Right. Are the XDKs, because I remember back, I mean, we have had access in the past to debug kits, which help us review games in a timely fashion. And that sort of gives us a little peek behind the scenes of how the sort of inner guts of the console work. And in the early days of the 360, the XDK updates were near constant. And then they sort of slowed down near the end. Are the updates very frequent on the developer side? Right now
they are. Yeah. I mean, they're basically keeping pace with what the consumers see in terms of the previews that they have. The monthly updates, I think, that's working as a cadence for us. The team obviously needs some time. Like, internally, we're on daily builds.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting updates to the OS pretty much constantly. Sometimes it's broken. Usually it's working fine. Then obviously it gives us a month to get something packaged up so developers and gamers could consume it. And
right.
Kind of treats their console the way it should. We appreciate all the people in the preview program. It really helps us kind of smoke test what we're putting out there before we send it out to the millions of consumers. So their help is very valuable. But yeah, the developer updates, they're probably, I'd say, every 2 weeks right now.
Okay.
But definitely on the monthly updates, we're giving them new features to take advantage of on our box.
How about screenshots function is another popular request. Where are we with that? You're laughing.
I'm laughing.
This is a good sign.
No, every time I'm meeting with the platform guys all the time, and screenshots are one of the things I ask about. And I, you know, naively, I make comments like, well, we can do video. So how hard can it be to just grab a frame of the video? Anybody that knows, people don't really want a screenshot that's just one frame of video. They want something that is better than that.
Yeah.
It's actually a little more technically challenging than you would have thought. But the team, Two weeks ago, they think they found a good solution for screenshots. They're working on it. They know people care about it. People want to see a good screenshot, especially because a lot of people will probably make them their backgrounds.
Custom background in the November update.
That's right. So the team has a path to getting it done, which is great. And now it's just prioritizing. What you will see, I think, over the holidays, and this has been traditional almost every year in Xbox, we will not do the size of monthly updates that we do like in December when you've got literally millions of consoles that are getting turned on for the first time.
You can't risk destroying anything,
That's right. So that's not a time for us to go, and I'm not saying screenshots are turning the OS inside out, but you'll see in November and December, well, November you've seen the list, and in December it's probably a time for us to pause a little bit just to make sure everything settles when all the new consoles are coming online. But definitely as we come back into the new year, you know, it'll be a time where people see new stuff and screenshots is on the list. I only chuckle because they know it's the question I'm going to ask every time. There are a couple platform features that I'm really pushing for, and screenshots are one of them.
So here's one. Actually, this occurred to me last night. I added this question to my list last night when I was I just started Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah.
And it reminded me, oh yeah, on Xbox One, with every game, I need to go in and invert my look on cameras. On the 360, we had, right from day one, we had the universal profile settings, which there only ever ended up being two.
Yeah.
I remember there were supposed to be more, but it was for shooters and racing games. Your default, you know, camera setting was for shooters, and what your default, you know, if you like cockpit view or behind the car or bumper view for racing games.
Bumper
and
view.
I always loved that on the 360, because I could just jump into any game and I wouldn't have to go into the options menu and just take that few annoying seconds. Are we going to see anything like that on Xbox One?
Yeah, I mean, you've seen us work more on profiles and identity and who you are on the box in this, even in the November. Sometimes I get mixed up because when we see all the lists, but the was it October or November? We're doing more around how you show up as an individual.
Yeah.
A lot of this is kind of outward facing right now. But definitely knowing who you are as a gamer and having those settings persist across games is in the same list of your identity on Xbox and making sure we complete that list. Absolutely.
So that is something that's going to come at
some
point.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, let's widen out a little bit here. Why? I've actually seen this from a lot of fans. You know, we're covering Master Chief Collection this month as part of IGN First. Doing a ton of great stuff.
Good job on that.
Thank you. It's obviously Halo's a super passion of mine, so it's been a treat to,
heard
just
that.
Do all sorts of good stuff. But I'm getting asked a lot, probably a tenth as much as you get asked. Why isn't there a Halo special edition console? You know, people are literally posting the shut up and take my money, gifts and online. And if someone internally wanted to do that, this is bad podcasting here. I left the computer on and things happened.
It's okay.
If someone internally said, man, I really want to do a Halo console, is that your call at the end of the day to be like, no, we're not going to do that? Or yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. And, it was a discussion really as we were looking at, I think the most logical one would have been the white console that we put with Sunset.
Right.
We do have obviously some limit to the number of special edition consoles we want to have in the market at any one time. You know, sometimes it just gets a little silly if there are like 15 different versions of a console.
But you do have like 6,000 bundles this holiday.
I mean, we do have bundles.
A ton of bundles. So I would ask, I guess I would just respectfully ask, what's the difference?
It's actually, I mean, from a supply chain standpoint, it's different in that you have to start pretty early on identifying what your hardware bundles are going your hardware SKUs are going to look like.
Right.
So color, hard drive size, all of these kind of things are things that you have to plan months in advance.
Yeah.
Whereas the bundles, you can kind of late bind those things. So the decisions on those two things are somewhat decoupled. And I know that might not make any sense to anybody, but the hardware roadmap and what the custom consoles are going to look like and what color are they going to be and all those things, that starts almost a year in advance.
Wow.
So like people are now bringing in some concepts of things that we might be able to do next year. And like, hey, what do you think of this? And it's a cool part of the job. And the software bundles happen. The game bundles happen a lot later. But on the specific question of Halo, I think, you know, it's a great question. Should we have taken the white console that we had and said, okay, that's Halo and not Sunset? It's a question. It's a logical question anybody could ask. For us, when we were making this decision, and it was right before E3, you know, Sunset's a game I really care about. I like the white console. The Master Chief Collection, as it was coming together, and I've kind of told the story before about how it was coming together, where it really started more as a Halo 2 anniversary, mm-hmm. and then it grew as Dan Ayoub and Bonnie and the team were really able to get just a massive amount of work done at a very high quality level, and I think the result is great. But we made the decision early on that our white console was going to go with Sunset, and that's a decision that we stuck with, and I hope a lot of people like it.
Is it purely just because it's you figure you need the carrot, the dangling carrot of the special console with the new IP that you're trying to grow, rather than the thing you know people are already excited about?
You know, the way I thought about it was more I wanted to show that releasing new IP and making it stand out is always a challenge.
Absolutely.
Right? Especially when you've got Call of Duty coming with a massive game. You've got Assassin's Creed coming with another great game. You've got Halo there. And here we are with Sunset. And, you know, in the end, the number of bundles in the custom console you do is not a huge percentage of the game sales that you had. But I wanted to put a stake out there, our first time working with Ted and the team at Insomniac, that this is a real first-party game for us, and we're really behind it. And behind it in such a way that when we're going to do our white console, I wanted to put it with a brand-new IP with a studio that had done a ton of great work and I really respected it. So it was, I won't call it a symbolic gesture, but it was something that was more about the importance I saw in Sunset as a new IP on our franchise. You know, would we have sold more white consoles if we put it with Master Chief Collection? I think that would have probably been the safer route. But I'd love to add another great AAA franchise to the list of exclusives on Xbox, and I think Sunset can be one of those things, and I want to get behind it in a big way.
So the Halo 5 Guardians special console is like a foregone conclusion for next holiday at this point, yes?
We're not announcing any custom consoles. That the past, we've done Halo custom consoles, and they've done really well, I'll say that. But, you know, it's kind of the same thing. When I look at new games out there, it's for us as a first party, I want to make sure we're pushing the safe versus something that's kind of makes a statement.
Yeah.
For us, Halo's obviously a statement game, so I'm not backing away from that at all. And like I said, it makes sense that people would say, hey, why isn't the white console shipping with Master Chief? But yeah, next year, Halo 5 is going to be a big event for us.
Since I have the opportunity to speak with you, I'll just tell you my personal advice, please, less is more. Like the white console, gorgeous. The Call of Duty console, eh.
What, on the design?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Particularly with the box, this box, maybe I feel like, doesn't quite lend itself as well to customization the way the 360
Ryan, this is why
did.
We do so many. Everybody has their options. Some people like white. We did the blue 360 this yeah. time. No, but it's less is more. I'm writing that down.
Writing
he wants
down.
A clean design for Halo
all right,
5.
Let's see here. Well, so similar question I would ask about, this is actually, this should hopefully have an even more interesting discussion. What about Master Chief Collection special edition software? You know, that's... You've got, again, people, I mean, like, I would love to give you $150 for if we recreated, you know, if you did a big statue version of the Halo 2 box art where he's sort of standing to the side with the dual pistols, but we just have one $60 SKU on this. Why not a Legendary Edition? Why not? You've got all these fans super excited about Master Chief Collection that would love a special edition of sorts of the software. So what's the decision process and the thought process there?
It's a good question. I will say when we looked at what Master Chief Collection turned into as we went through the development process, it's Combat Evolved 2, 3, 4, all running at 60. You got the Halo 5 beta. You've got Halo Nightfall. You've got the Halo Channel. You have all of these things yeah. landing that we – and this is – so it's – it's a big package.
Absolutely.
And just the thought of, okay, we're going to go and try to create something else. Like, we were kind of in the mode of, this is something we want to do for the Halo fans as they start their Halo journey on Xbox One. And let's put everything we can and all of our energy into that one package. And I've talked with you before about the pricing of that package was yeah. something I really wanted to make sure stayed in a zone where people felt like, okay, this is something I love, and it seems like I'm not being taken advantage of, and buying the fifth iteration of again or something like you know that was core to us as we were putting that product together. I agree with you, and just say it in a crass way. Maybe there was more money left if we would have built something at $99,
right?
But we just didn't have that approach with the Master Chief Collection.
So it's really all about you wanted it. You wanted no confusion. You wanted – basically, you really wanted to hammer home the value and not cloud the message of having some people think, oh, it's a $100 thing. So is it really just all about the value proposition?
And it was just pushing
every
– well, and I call it – let me rewind a little bit. And I've said this a number of times. I really view Halo – and I'll even see, the work that Bungie did on Halo in the past as the reason that Xbox has – a relevance and a presence in the games industry.
Absolutely.
And I look at the fans, the Halo Nation, that's been with us for over a decade now, and I didn't want to take that for granted. I didn't want to try to take advantage of their passion for Halo. I wanted to do something that I thought would meet, hopefully exceed their expectation in terms of value, quality, quantity. And I thought the cleanest way to do that was have one package that we just put everything in. The heart and soul of 343 is in that game. They went after and they redid the cinematics. I think you've seen some of the blur video.
Stuff is nuts.
It's incredible. I think it sets a new bar. I've seen some of the early Nightfall stuff. I think people are going to be really pleased with how that's come together. And it just felt like it was much more in line with the kind of thanks and the the respect that we have for the Halo fans that have been with us for such a long time.
You don't have people above you or shareholders going, Phil, you're leaving money on the table here. We could sell, if we sold 500,000 special edition units at $149 with a silly statue, we could make X number of more dollars.
Well, I mean,
is that the perk of being the boss? You can just be like, this is how I see it, and that's.
I mean,
how it
everybody
is.
Has a boss, right? And I have a boss as well. But I will say, I try to take a long term view on what we're doing with Xbox and in this business. And I think if we can't take that view as a platform holder, as Microsoft, with the resources that Microsoft has, I don't think we're kind of playing to our strengths. So the kind of short term, maybe there's a little money to be made. I mean, we've made some decisions in the past. I think I've talked publicly before when I look at something, one of the franchises I love, say Crackdown and Crackdown 2, where I thought we turned the crank on Crackdown 2 too quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't think we gave that franchise enough time to really meet the expectation that I had as a huge Crackdown fan, and I know the customers did, and the results showed. So while at the time you feel like you can do something short term where maybe there's a little blip in revenue, and in the long term, I think if you lose sight lines into who the customer is and how much they watch what we do and how what we do sets the kind of perspective of who we are as a company, I think that's where you can get into trouble. And frankly, I've been in the job 6 months now, but I'm definitely trying to take a long-term view in all decisions. I clearly don't do everything perfectly, and people call me out on it all the time. And that's great. You know, people calling me out, I want to get better at this job. But taking a long-term view, especially with our most passionate fans around Halo, is just something that's always going to be core.
So one more on Halo. How many copies are you expecting or projecting Master Chief Collection to sell? Let's just say in the first month or two, because I mean, the code name on the game when I first went and saw it with Dan Ayoub and the team, that they who would refer to it because he was so used to not saying the public. The code name is Ace, as in Ace in the Hole or Ace up your sleeve. So clearly, you know, this is an important game for you guys. You know, you know, what are we looking to sell here? What are you going to look at and go, okay, good. Or what are you going to look at and go, uh-oh?
It's funny you ask that because we have a little pool going inside on how many units we were going to sell. I think it's going to do better than our internal expectations. I've asked some friends of mine in the industry, Dennis Durkin, who now works at Activision, is a friend of mine who worked at Microsoft, and he and I were exchanging texts. What do you think this game's going to do? I mean, the game has turned out to be better, more complete, and bigger than maybe we thought it would. And that doesn't mean we had low expectations, but the project's very complex. And where I see where it's landed is exceptional.
Because you just got done saying a little while ago to me off the air about how the big fish have to sometimes cover for the little fish on things.
And was this going to be a big fish or was it going to be a little fish? If you go back and you look at CE anniversary, Halo 1 CE anniversary, it did well.
Not relative to the other Halo games.
That's right. So. But we didn't actually think, I mean, it was a remake of the first game. It was the 10th year anniversary. I was proud of the work that the team did, but it isn't what Master Chief Collection is. But if you look at where that is as a bar, I think Master Chief Collection will do significantly better than that in terms of units out there. You know, I hope every Xbox One customer buys it, not just because that's good for us in terms of sales of Halo. You know, Halo is an iconic Xbox franchise. So early, you're able to put all four games. You know, you're going to get Halo 5. We'll do other Halo games. We'll stay. I think it's just a great way to start your... if you haven't played these games, I think it's a great way to start your career with Halo.
Yeah.
And if you have, I'll say me going back, and I know you've played a little bit, it makes me kind of remember my early gaming days, early in Xbox, and I think it's just a nice kind of walk down history lane with some of those games.
Absolutely. So you mentioned, you know, that you've been on the job as head of Xbox for 6 months. Reflect on that a little bit. What were your goals going in, and how have you found the role in practice compared to your expectations going in?
I love the job. It's the job I want. It's the team. The team is the part that motivates me probably the most, just on a day-to-day basis. The year of the announce of Xbox, E3 2013, the toll it took on some of the internal team members was probably higher than I anticipated or many of us did. And I remember after E3 this year, where I think we had a better E3, clearly there's things we can always do better. But the number of people who walked up in the halls at work that were kind of visibly emotional about feeling re-energizing their pride in the product that they work on, that meant a lot to me. And for I've been on the business since the first Xbox. And sometimes as you're just kind of going through your day-to-day, your email list and your task list, your meetings and what all the stuff that you're doing, you forget about, you know, we invest a ton of time in what we do.
Absolutely.
So I found it very rewarding the first 6 months to watch the team execute so well. I had a meeting with the first party teams just last week. And I remember back in first party with Microsoft, we couldn't ship anything on time, right? And and I was in charge of Fable working with Molyneux. So I'll kind of put that on me as one of those games. I also had BC, if people really want to throw tomatoes at me. But
I saw it behind closed doors at E3. It looked fantastic. Super sad it never came out. Also, Shane Kim canceled True Fantasy Live Online.
Yes, TFLO, yes. But I look at what the first party teams did this holiday, and Sunset came out. Or Sunset's going to come out. I think it's great. Forza Horizon 2 is out, reviewing really well. People are really enjoying it. Master Chief Collection. I mean, the team's hitting dates. They're hitting at quality. I just think they're doing an exceptional job. And I think and then we talked about the monthly updates earlier. The platform team's doing such a nice job. And I actually think that such a large percentage of that effort comes from people's just internal belief in where they're working and the product that they're working on, which I love. And it's energizing. It's easier to do this job when people come in excited to show you what they've come up with. We've got some other things that we're on the cusp of talking about, hopefully, that people will get excited about. But the team is just like they're chomping at the bit to make more progress. On the challenging side of the job, I'm learning. I've been the first party studio guy.
Yeah.
And if you put me in a studio setting, I'm at home. you put me in front of the hardware teams or sitting with the CFO of Microsoft going through my business, I'm learning what that is.
Right.
And it's fun to learn, and I mess up some things, and I get told that, and it and that's okay, right? But the tough part's clearly dwarfed by the amazing support we've seen from the fans and the people working on Xbox, and that's been great.
So how would this now, you've said before, we've talked before about, you're new to this role, but you've had a seat at the table the whole time. But
yeah.
I'm curious, how would the Xbox One be different if you had held this role from the project's inception, however many years ago?
Well, I'm glad you bring this up, because I see it sometimes on Twitter and other places where people want to call me out as somebody who was at the LT, that leadership table when the decisions were made for Xbox One, and that's absolutely true. And I don't want anybody to, I've never tried to wash my hands or distance myself from my role on the Xbox One leadership team through the announcement of the console, E3 2013. I was there, and I'm not trying to create some kind of false history that makes me look better to
right.
say, oh, I wasn't there and I wasn't involved in. I'm going to take responsibility for those decisions, absolutely, good ones and bad ones. I have to. Otherwise, I don't have any credibility in what I do going forward. It's the way I look
right.
at it. I wouldn't listen to me if all of a sudden I tried, I was asleep during those meetings or something. It's kind of silly. I was there. The question about what I would have done differently going forward, I think hopefully people can look at what I've been pushing for in the first 6 months of being on the job. And I think that would have been, I don't think that would have changed if we rewound to 2012, 2011, or whenever the right starting line is, and said, okay, what would I have done? I think the consumer choice, making sure that fans had feedback into what we were building, getting their feedback earlier, making sure that the kind of games ecosystem was well taken care of. And I've said it before, I love the entertainment features on our box. And mm-hmm. I can tell you, because I see what people are doing on the box, a ton of people use our box to watch Netflix and Amazon
sure.
and TV. Like
maybe HBO Go someday.
That's right. Now, that was an interesting announcement by them the other day. But I think we get permission as a platform to focus on entertainment when we're a great gaming platform. And before we've earned that permission and we go out and we try to explain to people that we're an entertainment platform without checking the box for all of the the Xbox fans out there that this is going to be the place where I want to play games.
Yeah.
I think that's where we confuse people. And I come back, and the team knows this, and we're making decisions. I'm going to be gamer-centered on the decisions that we want to make for the platform.
So does that extend to the hardware as well? That's kind of more what I was... If you had been there from day one and your team's putting together, okay, we're looking at these specs, we're going to do... You know, it's like, oh, you know, back when the consoles were first being announced, it was the RAM was kind of a big deal, the GDDR3 versus the 5,
and, yeah.
You know, the which GPU unit, CPU, where do we call... You know, do you feel like you would have pushed a little more on the hardware side? In the inception of this thing, if you'd had the opportunity?
Yeah. It's
not that it's a bad console, but, you know, the PlayStation 4 is a monster. And whereas you kind of, I would say, maybe had the edge last time on the hardware side, do you think you would have kind of, pushed a little farther in some areas on the hardware side?
I mean, it's easy for me to say yes, and I know to a lot of people that will make me seem like, you know, a better guy. And I honestly don't know, right? Because yeah. I know the people that made those decisions, and I don't know the realities of the situation when they made those decisions.
Right.
So it's easy for me to sit back now and say, okay, we would have built a 3 teraflop box and sold it for $99. Like, ah! But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what trade-offs they were making because we didn't all make all of the decisions as a leadership team. Like, I was making content decisions.
Yeah, you were making software decisions.
So I think it's a little unfair for me to go back and kind of cherry pick a certain decision on, hey, what RAM do we pick, or this ESRAM thing, or the HDMI in, what I've done that connect, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And just say, oh, I'm all knowing at this point, and knowing where we are now, I would have changed these decisions. I think that's hard for me. Again, it might make me look good if I just said yes, but I don't know. I don't know in the context. I will say that the work that the platform team has done to give as much power in the hands of the developers as we can has made a tremendous impact in the last 6 months, and I'm really proud of that. And the box, from a reliability standpoint, I mean, I lived through Red Rings on 360 mm-hmm. and other things, so has been significantly better than we were at the launch of 360, which has been great. I'm not ashamed of the hardware that we have anyway. And if somebody asked me, should I go buy an Xbox One, I can definitely tell them, from the content that we have, from the platform that we have, from the service that we have, and from the hardware that we have, yes. Like, I can make a commitment to them that they're buying into a platform that I'm committed to across all facets of that platform, and that we're going to make this platform as great as we can for them.
I know I'm running out of time with you, so I'll try and just squeeze in a couple more questions here on my
long
list.
I'll go to one-word answers.
Can we expect more? I'm down to half my hard drive space, and that's before putting 65 gigs of Master Chief Collection on it. Can we expect more 1 terabyte SKUs next year, even beyond? I know, obviously, as time goes on, hard drive prices get
cheaper.
Yeah,
I mean,
is that a big priority for you in getting more space in the console?
Yeah, I mean, you see it with...
Because I don't want to plug in external crap. I know you have the yeah. option for that, which is great, but I just want it in the box.
Yeah, and you saw it in the 360 generation. I mean, you're riding this price curve, performance, you call it Moore's yeah. Law, whatever you want to call it. You know, Moore's Law necessarily applies to hard drives, but we want to make sure that we're matching the demand that's out there for hard drive space. It will remain as part of one of the equations or variables that we have in our box, and something that we'll continue to push on, absolutely.
Where is Inside? What's going on with that? One of my favorite things from E3. I mean, the Limbo team, Play Dead. It's been very, very quiet ever since. Have you seen that game lately? Where is it? And when can we see more?
I saw it a couple months ago. And you know that developer, Dino, and the guys at Play Dead, good friends. And it was great to have them on stage. I say, you know, they're not the most gregarious studio out there promoting their game every day. They're one of those studios that really crafts the art. They want to make it great.
Sure.
And they want to show it when they're ready to show it, which is why it was great to have it on our stage. They're going to be... I let them drive. They know their game. They're going to be the ones that drive when they want to show it, when they have the next beat. And it's not going to... We do that with most of our studios. I get a lot of questions, Quantum, and you know, are we going to see anything else in 2014? And for a lot of our great games, most of the games, I think we drive based on production and when we have something to say. And I think it'll be a little while before we see something else on Inside, not because there's any problem.
Yeah.
It's just the team's busy working on the game.
Fair enough. Where do you, as a gamer... as a gamer, because you are a gamer. That is one thing that people like about you. You're not a faceless suit that's just moving numbers in spreadsheet columns. You actually do play the Xbox. You play video games on all platforms.
Yeah.
What do you as a gamer want from the next Gears of War?
Oh, Gears of War. I do apologize for people who caught me on... I retweeted the Marcus Fenix collection. I shouldn't have done that. It was an accident. the next Gears of War. You know, I'm a codename user. I was on Warfare working with Ken Lobb on the first Gears of War. And the thing with Cliff and all the guys, the thing that was great about the early Gears of War games to me were just the kind of epic scale of the settings that I was in, the kind of, remember clicking Y to see these massive destruction moments.
Yeah.
The story, the setting was a lot more what I would call soulful and maybe even a little dark. And I think, and Rod and I have talked about this, I think the game over time became almost more of a parody of itself. Not for any kind of horrible reasons. It's hard to continue to manage the IP. And Gears 2 did well. Gears 3 did well. So I thought the franchise continued to grow. But when we've talked about getting back to something, I think the story and the setting and what what they're going through as a band in a Gears of War, like the name of the game and all, really meant something to what that game was about. We've got to get back to that, the feeling of those individuals.
Do you see it as a reboot, or do you see it as a some sort of continuation within the universe that already exists?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a reboot because I don't think the franchise necessarily needs that. I mean, the amount of passion that's out there for Gears of War today, I know Judgment didn't hit everybody's needs and desires in terms of what they wanted, but I think we can continue, but we can also, we have a new team, Rod's there to really help with the continuity. I think we can make sure we're investing in this thing for the next decade, which is how I want to think about it.
Are there first-party studios working on new IP that we don't know about yet?
When we get into our definition of first-party again, we are definitely, yes, there are first-party internal and external studios working on games that are not announced. I think that will always be true, just to be clear. I mean, I look at our portfolio, and clearly we have the bigs the at the top that are just...
Well, we got to a place at the end of the 360 generation where we were pretty in a pretty regular Fable, Halo, Gears, Forza cycle. I think that's kind of where my question comes from.
Okay.
And you've shown a little, we're seeing Phantom Dust of all things coming back and Crackdown. Well, it's a game not a lot of people played back in the original.
That's right.
But Crackdown. So are we going to see that continued?
Yes.
Because I think, but what a lot of Xbox gamers don't want to see. I mean, as much as we love those tentpole Xbox franchises that I just mentioned, I think we don't want to see you and your team sort of, for lack of a better term, rely on those. We want to see the continued first-party innovation.
So do I. And I think new stories, new characters give us a new canvas to try new things. Sunset's a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a game that isn't like anything else in our portfolio. And I think that's great. And it's I want to continue to invest in things that kind of push the boundaries. I don't need another military space marine game. I don't probably need another racing game. People push me on PGR or something. But in terms of trying things that are new and have a unique reason to be in our portfolio, it's got to be a commitment for us as a first party, absolutely.
I ask you this every time I get a chance to interview you. What the hell is Rare up to?
Yeah.
I would... think as a gamer, right? It would, from the armchair analysis thing that I know you hate that I do.
I
feel like Kinect Sports is probably over. We've seen three of them. Kinect is unbundled now. You and I talked at E3 about that, and it seems like the sales were good, but they've definitely come down from the first game or two. So where do you, and you've said in the past on this show a year ago, said that you don't see Rare as a Kinect studio. So what's going on with them? When are we going to hear from them? And are they, do you value that incredible IP in their backlog? Do you see them as doing a new thing?
I'd love to see them do something new that feels like a Rare game. I'm traveling out there in the second week, I think, of November, and I'm going to see their new game pitch that they have. I don't know anything about it. I hear some whispers in the halls, but they don't want anybody to tell me because they want to do the unveiling, which is great. I love that they do that. I also just on the Kinect.
So what have they been working on for the last 8 months then? Just trying to get ready for this pitch meeting, like prototyping and stuff?
It's not about the pitch meeting. They try a lot of ideas. Usually what studios will do is they will start up five or six things.
Right, right.
And then they kind of self self-weed out the things that aren't working until they have an idea that really works. And I want to give them that time, and they have that time. So I'm going to be there. We're going to look at what they have. I was going to say, on Connect Sports, Connect Sports, I think, plays a role in our portfolio.
It does, sure.
And I think it's great that it's in the market. And I wouldn't say we'd never do anything else with Connect Sports. What I've said is I don't want Rare to just become the Connect Sports team. There are potentially other people that could do a Connect Sports game. I'm not announcing anything. We're not working on another Connect Sports game right now. But I do think it can play a role in our portfolio, and I wouldn't just want to say Connect Sports is dead because Rare decides that there's something else that they want to go work on. Those two decisions can be decoupled.
All right, I know I got to let you go. Last question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the Mojang deal.
Yeah.
Or Mojang? What's the
however you want to say it.
I see it as Mojang, but I've seen it. I don't even know. Anyway, that's beside the point. So you've got to be looking farther ahead than Minecraft, and plus, you know, the three founders are leaving anyway. But it's yours. Were you part of that deal, or was that a greater? Did that even go to? You mentioned before that you have bosses.
Yeah.
Was that a Phil Spencer deal? And what's next with Minecraft?
Yeah. You know, I hesitate to call it a Phil Spencer deal because of all the people that did all the work to make it happen. It was born out of something that we wanted to do in the Xbox team. So this wasn't, because I've seen some of the speculation of it came like it was hoisted upon us by the company or something.
Right.
Absolutely not. It was something we've had the partnership with Mojang. We've worked with them for years on Minecraft on 360. Notch and Carl and the guys are friends of mine. It's a big deal. And obviously,
yeah.
You know, for me, I look at it as just a great game to add to our portfolio. I love who plays Minecraft. I love that, you know, male, female, young and old. It's something that lives on so many different screens. I'd love to bring it to more screens out there. I think what we've learned through Xbox Live is something that we can help in unifying a little bit of what happens with Minecraft today. If I'm on PC, I get access to the mod servers. If I'm on console or the mobile editions, I don't. And, you know, Matt Booty and I are kind of looking at, well, how do we help bring that whole system together a little more? Because there are other games that are out there that kind of let me move from screen to screen and fairly seamlessly. So I think there are opportunities for us to work. And it's just, I think it has such headroom as an IP. And frankly, I love what it means for us as a gaming industry. And maybe that's overstating it a little bit. Kids creating things, playing together, having a good time. It has a role in classrooms. I just think it's good for us.
Oh, it's all my 10-year-old nephews play.
And like the YouTube crazy. Community around it is incredible. It's going to be, I see us as shepherds of the IP. Right.
Do you see it as a bigger thing than a video game? Do you see it as maybe you produce an animated series or a film? Or do you see it because you just said it was born out of the Xbox Games team. It was your team's deal. But does the company see it as having potential other things to leverage out of it?
I mean, they will look to us to drive it. I don't actually get a lot of you must go do something with this IP from the company. They're curious on how we're growing our business and how the fans are reacting to some of the policy changes and things. And it's been a good dialogue with the company on those things. I look at Minecraft and I think a little bit on the riff we had before, I think we earn permission to do other things with Minecraft when we meet the Minecraft community's desires around what the franchise is. And that's Matt and I have been pretty consistent in that. I don't want us to go and try to make it something it isn't. But I do think it has room to grow. I know Jeb and the team there, like Junk Boy and Lydia and all of them, people there, they have a lot of enthusiasm for where they'd like to see the franchise go.
Do you start bundling it free with Windows 10 with Xbox One? Because it's a platform, right? Can you just make a Minecraft 2?
Well, yeah, I don't know if, you know, Minecraft 2, if that's the thing that makes the most sense. The deal hasn't closed. Like, right, we haven't closed the deal. So I think that's important to note. So any kind, we're not in there managing the franchise right now. Where it goes, I'll just say what I said before. The community around Minecraft is as strong as any community out there. And I think we need to meet the needs and the desires of what the community has before we get permission to go off and do something else. It doesn't mean everything we're going to do is going to map to 100% of their acceptance, because I don't know if there is any topic where 100% of people agree. But we look at job one is to go out and meet the needs of the Minecraft community first, and then we can think about ways that we can actually help grow it. And that's our sole focus.
Right. Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, regular podcast Unlocked listener. Thank you so much for stopping by. I love these. Let's make these visits more than annual.
Great. I love it. Thanks for the time.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.